Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, this shit is bad, dog. Under 5 black skin and got a black bar. Yeah, this shit is fucked up. No more cries, time to ride if they like us. Yeah.
They wanna trap your body, lock your mind. See you rising, wanna stop your grind. Sell the drugs they sold to us and call it drug bust. Grab they money, double product, then they lock you up, it's fucked up. They stand they ground, you better bow on yours and tough luck. We start rebelling.
Good evening, guys. Welcome to YB Radio. We have another amazing show for you guys. Tonight is Thought versus Queens. Can black women do both? This has been a very, very hot subject, so we're ready to talk about it with you guys. Do I have my amazing guest with me tonight? My amazing host, I'm sorry.
You're
peace,
good.
Peace, everybody. Hold that same.
All right, how are you guys doing?
I'm doing okay. Feeling a little bit better. Wasn't feeling too hot earlier. But, yeah, I'm doing okay, and I'm ready to get into this topic.
Awesome.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm good.
Awesome. Well, you know, before we get started with the topic, we're going to go into our amazing Leaders Are Readers Challenge, or Readers Are Leaders Challenge, and Shalice, we'll have you kick it off again this week. So I'll go ahead and let you open up for your passage that you have for us.
Okay, so once again, we are going to do the Leaders of Readers Challenge, which is brought to you by What's Up Africa. So this week, it's not related to our topic, but I felt like it was a powerful passage. So I'm going to be reading from The Miseducation of the Negro by Carter Goodson Wilson. If we can finally succeed in translating the idea of leadership into that of service, we may soon find it possible to lift the Negro to a higher level. Under leadership, we have come into the ghetto. By service within the ranks, we may work our way out of it. Under leadership, we have been constrained to do the biddings of others. By service, we may work out a program in the light of our own circumstances. Under leadership, we have become poverty-stricken. By service, we may teach the masses how to earn a living honestly. Under leadership, we have been made to despise our own possibilities and to develop into parasites. By service, we may prove sufficient unto the task of self-development and contribute our part to modern culture. So, I chose that passage because I feel like it really speaks to the condition that we are in right now as a people. You know, within my lifetime, there's never been a time greater than now for us to really put into practice a system of black empowerment. And that's what we need to be working towards, not just individual projects, not just individual programs, but, you know, we have to always be about empowerment. So tonight I want to lead into our hot topics before we get into our main topic. I think the first hot topic that we have is we wanted to talk about Hillary Clinton and her cooning. Is that the first topic?
Yeah, we can start with that. So as I think many of you guys have woke up to on Twitter, at this point it was on the news, Instagram, everything, talking about Hillary Clinton and her hot sauce in her bag, period, swag. And the reason why this is trending all over all of the news outlets right now is because, of course, she sat down with the Breakfast Club, which is Charlamagne Tha God, DJ Envy, and Angela Yee, in which I believe Angela Yee asked her what was in her bag, and Hillary Clinton responded hot sauce in her bag, in which I believe Charlamagne something to the effect of, you pandering towards the black vote, and she basically was like, is it working? and then continued on, you know, with her interview. So I thought it was very interesting, and I'll let my amazing co-host kind of touch on your opinions first. Keith, what did you think about that?
It's hard to judge. I mean, I've always thought that Hillary Clinton, I mean, both Clintons, honestly, would do things to try to, you know, rub up for the black vote. But, I mean, I guess that's part of their job. Not even I guess, it is part of their job and what they're trying to do, what they're trying to accomplish in the position they're trying to hold. So, I mean, I ain't mad at her for playing the game. I'm kind of mad at her for not playing the game right. Because it's like you're supposed to be smarter than to do some obvious bull like she did. Like, I mean, hot sauce, and then when he asks you if you pandering, you basically like, well, of course. Like, it's basically what she said. So, I mean, I have very low expectation for her or most politicians. So it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't send me into an alarm. It doesn't, you know, get me all hyped up because I wasn't going to vote for her no damn way. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, her things she said before this and her actions before this are more appalling than, you know, an interview she did with the Breakfast Club that I already knew was going to be lame. So it is what it is.
Yeah, I agree. And I will say that the Breakfast Club interview did go into a lot of other things. One of the main things that they went into was her using the word super predator, which was basically language used to describe black youth at the height of the drug-related violence and crime that was going on in the late 90s and early 2000s. And, you know, she did backpedal and kind of say, you know, that was a poor choice of words. She was talking about drug gangs and traffickers and cartels and whatever the case may be. I just think it's interesting. I think, as I've stated on my opinion here before, like, they're very pandering. Some people think Hillary Clinton is Bill Clinton, and it's not. And they are not black. As much as people like to say Bill Clinton was our first black president, he was not. So, you know, to me, it's just interesting to watch. But I definitely agree with you. What about you, Lisi?
Well, I mean, I think I'm pretty clear about the fact that I think that the Clintons are by far the most dangerous type of white supremacists because they are the ones that come with smiles and offering gifts to our people. And that's why, you know, we continue to act like Hillary Clinton is not a white supremacist, but she is, and she does this shit purposely. It's like she's laughing at our people. Like, when they call her out about pandering for black votes, she agrees to it. Like, yeah, that shit working too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have completely checked out of this election cycle. I'm totally devoted to the local politics, and I'm following that closely. No, when it comes to the presidential election, I really do not care because I'm not interested in choosing my oppressor at all. So, yeah, that's my two cents about it.
Well, that's good.
Well, how do you feel about basically it? How do you feel about it?
I mean,
before you move on.
I mean, I think, like I said, I just think it's interesting to watch. I kind of watch that more as a spectacle. Like, it's kind of like, for me, when Bill Clinton went on Arsenio Hall and played the saxophone, you know, it's like, okay, I guess, but is it doing anything for me or making me be like, oh, yes, she got hot sauce in her bag. I'm going to do that or, what, you know, vote for her or think she's interesting or think she's funny. No, but, you know, it is what it is. Like I said, it's interesting to watch. I'm definitely on the same page as both of you guys. It is troubling at the same time because she does flip-flop and say things that are very opposite in nature. So for me, I have an issue with not knowing where you stand, at least not to say that I am advocate for Donald Trump or will vote for him or anything like that, but at least you know where he's standing. Like, I have an issue when you kind of don't know where people stand on things. So that's kind of how I feel on that. But we can go to the next hot topic.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you guys are aware, I'm pretty sure you are, or if you haven't seen it or heard about the Hidden Colors documentaries, which I always enjoyed. They seem to be releasing their fourth one coming up pretty soon, and the brother who directs it was dropping little sneak previews on Ustream like a day or so ago. So yeah, I just wanted to shed light on that, you know, just to let people know, like, a lot of times people process information differently. And I'm one of those people, like, it's hard for me to read a book in its entirety because of how my mind operates and how my mind is always wandering. So it's easier for me to watch a documentary and even to discuss with somebody, you know, things that I can retain better than reading it. So if you're one of those people and you're very much into, you know, gaining knowledge about, you know, your history, African-American history, or if you're just into that, you don't have to even be of African-American descent. Hidden Colors is very good and very powerful. And the last, this one is supposed to be pretty deep-rooted with the social climate of today, which is kind of different for my past experience. They normally go into the history of everything, but to see, we're gonna see the perspective of, I guess, what they believe how everything is now, and probably how it got here. So, have either one of you guys seen Hidden Colors 1, 2, or 3?
Yes, I'm a huge supporter of Tariq Nasheed. Like, I listen to his Ustream show. I watch his YouTube videos. I've seen all of the Hidden Colors documentaries. And the fourth Hidden Colors installment is going to focus on the religion of white supremacy. And they're going to tie in how the overall system of white supremacy is related to the events that you see happening now, how this is not something that is just happening. This is something that was planned strategically and is now being put into effect and unleashed upon our people. And, you know, I wanted to touch on something that you said, Keith, because I often hear people say that it's hard for them to sit down and actually read the book. I started what I call my path to righteousness through Hidden Colors. You know, that really opened my mind, and it made me want to seek the knowledge. But I really encourage you all, allow the documentaries to just be a door, because you have to read the books. It can be so hard. I promise you it's so hard. But it gets easier because as you continue to study the words of our ancestors, it opens up galaxies and universes in your mind. And I'm telling you, it's so worth, you know, allowing the documentaries to introduce you to the knowledge, but then actually getting into the book. So, yeah, I really hope, and I can confirm that there will be a screening of Hidden Colors on May 26th. That is the release date. There's going to be a screening here in Baltimore at the Senator, and when there's more information about that, I'll post it on the YBE page.
Yeah,
that's dope.
I'll say definitely, to piggyback off what you said about, like, it opening the door, it definitely opened the door. Like, I've always kind of been interested in learning things, period. Like, it doesn't have to be about anything specific. Like, I just like to learn new things. So I'm, like, an avid YouTuber, you know what I'm saying? And, like, before YouTube got clustered with a whole lot of nonsense to try to filter out what was really real and stuff like that, it was a lot more, it's still good, but it was, to me, it was better. But one day one of my boys came to me and showed me Hidden Colors 2, and it just blew my mind, and I went back to the first one, and it was just, like you said, opened the door. It made me want to research for myself. And not only did it make me want to research for myself the topics in which they discussed, it made me want to research the people that was talking. You know, because that was one of my first times even really seeing Dr. Francis Kress Welsing. Like Tariq Nasheed, that's what I thought, to Umar. I forgot the other brother's name, but I won't hear them talk too. But yeah, it opens the door for a lot of information. So, like she said, please, like, you know, whether you like to read, whether or not, just check that documentary out. And don't be afraid to sit your kids down, depending on the age, and let them watch it too, because, you know, they can get A's on their test saying that Abraham Lincoln did this and John Adams did that. But to really know what's up, that's our job. You know what I'm saying? So please sit your kids down and get them some knowledge.
I want to say something about that real quick before you speak your piece, JD. When you say, yes, sit your kids down and give them the knowledge. Our children are not weak. Black children are fearless, okay? That's why you see them ripping and running the streets like they are, because these kids out here are fearless. And it doesn't matter how young they are. You know, kids, black children throughout history have witnessed atrocities and have continued to overcome and continue to endure. So never believe that you have to shield your children from the truth. They need the truth in order to combat what is out here in this society. Like, they need that in order to anchor them in something. So, yes, I encourage you. Like, if you have children, definitely sit them down. Make them watch all four of them. Turn it into, like, a thing that y'all do as a family, because they need that information. Okay, go ahead, JP.
I mean, I agree totally with you guys. I haven't seen the Hidden Colors series as of yet. As an avid person that likes to watch documentaries, I'm all for it. So, you know, anything that opens up a doorway for your mind, I'm down for. So it's something that definitely isn't on my list, but my list is kind of rather long, so I definitely need to get to that, and the screening sounds interesting. I just, like, want to stress kind of how Shalee said, we have to self-educate ourselves. A lot of the things that we are learning, need to learn, or need to know about our people are not taught in school. So it's just stuff that we need to further educate. Everyone's not able to go to a HBCU and learn these things, or have amazing conscious parents that are able to learn these things. So if there's something that you need to know, or there's greater knowledge that you seek within yourself, you have to go out and find it. And for me, I say that because as many of y'all know, like, my mom is Turkish. So she's mixed with African, Ethiopian, and Sudan, but she didn't grow up in America, so her experience of being an African American is very different, because she doesn't really consider herself as such technically, but that's what she's looked at as here. So my experience and learning about that, I really didn't have much, so I had to gain a lot of the knowledge myself. So I just stress that you do that, whether it's documentaries, whether it's Googling something, like, the internet will open up your mind. Just check your sources, and that goes with documentaries, books, as well as what you search on the internet. Everything may not be from a credible source or from someone that may be educated or well-versed on the topic, so just check and learn. So I definitely agree with that and everything you guys said. So we'll kind of go to the next one, in which is the Trump rally, I guess, tomorrow, Mellon. I know I'll let Elise kind of talk about that a little bit, since I'm not American, nor do I care for Trump. I really don't have anything to say about that, but I would love to hear your thoughts and, you know, how you feel about it. Same as Keith, since you're in PG.
Shut that shit down. That's my thoughts on it. Like, I mean, I personally, I think that Donald Trump is the perfect instrument that's going to cause white supremacy to implode, you know, amongst itself, because now you see all the white supremacists are arguing over how blatantly racist they can actually be. This is the argument about Donald Trump, because you have to remember that all of the Republicans are white supremacists when it comes down to it. So anytime you see someone who is a Trump supporter and is at a Trump rally, you should assume that they are a white supremacist as well. Even the people who say that they are curious about that message, what are you curious about? You know what he's saying for. So that's why I think that, you know, normally I'm not the one to encourage protesting, because, you know, even though I did lead a protest last weekend, that's not really my thing. I don't know if protesting is really effective. But I think in cases like this, yes, it needs to be a collective effort to shut that shit down, because we have to take a stand and let them know that you cannot have a blatant white supremacists out here talking that shit here in our state. No, you can't come here and do that. And he knew better than to come to Baltimore. You see, he's all the way out in Chester County. He didn't come to Baltimore.
Yeah.
He knew better. So he's at the edge of Maryland. So, I mean, I'm excited to see what happens. We have a lot of energetic and passionate people, some groups that are organized. So we're going to see what kind of strategies they come up with and what happens tomorrow.
Yeah, I agree 100%. What do you think, Keith?
I'll say this. I get the point of shutting it down, and I'm not against that at all. But just on the flip side of that, I would love to see it happen. The people, at least, like you said, he did go kind of far out of Maryland, and that's kind of like a random spot to do something like that in, but I guess it's perfect for his demographic. But it will be good for people to see their coworkers and their quote-unquote friends and stuff who are actually going to go into that rally, probably not expecting to be seen. And the thing is, to me, now people who are going to vote for Trump are going to vote for him. I don't care what you shut down. Okay, let's be clear. They're going to vote for him, they're going to vote for him. But to take the mask off, so to speak, you know what I'm saying, to that's what I like about this Trump situation. The only thing that I really take from it, and like you said, Bianca was like, you know where he stands. And not only do you know where he stands, you know where the people that surround him stand. And that was one of the things about the plan, so to speak, is that, you know, even though people knew who they were because, you know, people in town wasn't that stupid, they still, you know, maxed themselves in order to not really have to admit to it or to have to really deal with that stigma on their normal day-to-day business. So this right here is basically like an unveiling to me. When you see these people and they out there and they cussing and they doing all this, and to me, to go to a Trump rally is one thing. Because, like, to vote for him in the privacy of your voting booth and to look at his debates and stuff on TV and support him is one thing. I mean, hey, you know, it's support is support. But to actually go to the event where you know things get chippy, but you're like, nah, I'm going to support, that means you're serious. So if I were to see one of my coworkers or someone I do business with out there, I would know yourself, because it's like, dog, not only you support this man, you love it. Like, you are him, because there's no way you came out here knowing the effects of it, you know, the repercussions of it, and you still rocking. That means you with it. So, man, let him go where he go. You know what I'm saying? Let people do what they do. But I love seeing these people expose themselves, because the one thing I can't stand is a fake.
That's what his whole movement is about, to feel like they feel like they shouldn't have to be ashamed of being racist anymore. Why should they have to? Because now we're too PC as a society. That's what the white talking points are. And it's not even about white supremacy. It's about white dominance, because they feel as though they are being, as they are, they're already genetically inferior. So now we're getting into this thing where they feel like they are being nixed out of America, which is, like the white supremacist home base. This country was built on white supremacy. So, you know, we're going to see what this election really yields. I personally think it's just a setup for Hillary to win, but who knows?
I'll say this. I don't mean to take over or cut off, but I was having a conversation with one of the, is that me? Sorry. I was having a conversation with one of my brothers the other day, and he said something, even though it's simple, I never really thought about things like this. He's like, it's a lot more stupid people in the world and in our country than you would believe. And though people with intellect tend to, you know, gravitate towards other people with intellect, I mean, we still are aware that there are people out here who, you know, for lack of a better term, are stupid. And when I say stupid, people who just don't want to know anything. Like, you know, I don't believe anybody's born dumb. You know what I'm saying? Because to be smart is just be open to gain knowledge. That's all I take. You know, that's what smart is to me. You're open enough to gain knowledge, then you're smart. But somebody who just completely shut off and don't care and don't want to care, that's someone who's stupid. And that's the people he's really preying on, because a lot of these people that are riding for him are these that are in the lower class of America, or even the lower middle class, and these rednecks and people who are going hard in the paint for him don't understand, or maybe that he don't care about them either. And he probably care about them even less than he care about Black and Latinos. So he's really playing on the stupidity of the people that he's gaining the vote from. And I mean, I guess that's what all these politicians really do. But he's really doing it. He's really showing you. Because his rich as born rich, going to die rich, could care less about a worker, a cowboy, a farm worker in Redneck City that, you know, in a town of 200. But they're going to be the ones that's going to ride for him and do stupid stuff because they feel like, make America good again. Man, it's hilarious to watch, but it's also scary because it's like, you know, people think we're above some type of revolution. People think we're above some type of implosion, and we're not. You know, every empire must fall, and we may be nearing ours and not even realize it, or people not even notice how bad it's going to get, because when we have so much turmoil going on within, it's going to be so much easier for somebody outside to attack. So just keep your eyes open.
Yeah, I definitely agree with both of you guys 100%. So I'm going to wrap up the hot topics with that. We've given them 30 minutes of some great dialogue, and we're going to kind of go on to our next main topic that I know we've been excited for. It looks like the internet has been excited for. So tonight's conversation, as you all know, is Thoughts versus Queen. Can Black women do both? And I will kind of preface this with this. The title is kind of ambiguous. The terms that are used in the title is kind of, those are the terms that I see. So not necessarily saying you dress a certain way or you carry yourself in a certain way that you may be a thought, but that's the words that the people are using. So I just say that to preface that it's not literal, but this is meant to open a dialogue. So I'm definitely excited to chat with you guys about this because there's kind of been a lot going on. If most of you guys are aware, we have Amber Rose in Blac Chyna, which is ongoing and everlasting in the news. Azealia Banks versus Wale, slut shaming. It's a bunch of conversations being thrown around kind of around the same topic. So that's what we're kind of going to bring in today. So I'm going to kick it to Shalice, and I want to hear your thoughts about it, or, you know, kind of the statement that you have, since I know having this topic this week was your idea and, you know, I fell in love with it, but I definitely want to hear what you think.
Well, my opinion is actually very unique. It strays a little bit from what people would expect me to feel, because I do happen to be a more traditional type of woman. I was raised by my grandmother, and my mother was 35 when she had me. So I was never, I was always taught how to be a lady, and I was always taught in the way that Black women are taught. They're like, if you're going to do something, make sure you do it behind closed doors when nobody is around. That there's just certain, I guess you can call it, respectability politics. Because I was raised to want to be seen as being respectable. It's not that I don't have my issues. It's not that I don't have my vices. It's not that, you know, I don't get it all the way popping behind doors. But that's just where I stand on it. So now you see the conversation surrounding respectability politics is always evolving, and it's starting to turn away from the fact that we hold, you know, the Claire Huxtables as role models. Now we're questioning, well, what makes Claire Huxtable any better than a Cardi B? We should root for them both as hard. That's the argument that I hear. But from my perspective, it's like, why wouldn't I want to encourage any sister to be respectable? Even if I meet you at your bottom where you're at,
why wouldn't I want you to do better? Why would I want you to encourage to stay at the level of being a stripper or, you know, an escort? Why would I want you to stay at the level of working at McDonald's? Not to say that any of those things are wrong, but if I see a light in you and I feel like you could be better than that, then why would I tell you that, you know, oh, okay, you know what, you go, girl. It's okay. You're doing good. No, that's just not who I am. That's the conversation that I want to have tonight. We argue back and forth about can black women do both, but can we really do both? Is there a standard that we're supposed to be meeting? Should we be shattering that standard? You know, what message should we be sending to our young girls about black womanhood? And don't forget, we got to bring up the whole Erykah Badu thing as well, because that's just
yes.
a real hot topic.
Yes, and I do apologize. I didn't want to interject and say that we had to bring that up. And I think that one thing that you brought up for me, which is an important issue, because I kind of lie in the middle on this issue, but I think the key word here, or when the way you're posing it, is respectability. So what is considered respectability, I think, is where people lie, because I understand exactly what you're saying, Shalice. But at the same time, if a woman wants to be a stripper and she's an amazing stripper and she feel like she the best stripper that she may be, maybe she don't consider herself at her lowest low and she just thinks she getting money and living, what makes her less respectable than the woman in the suit that's trying to get to the top and be the best of her industry, whatever it may be? So I think that is a line that people walk, or opinions that kind of are on both sides of the scale, in my opinion. Keith, as a man, what do you think to that, or what's your opinion to that?
I think that accountability is what people are really trying to kill in our society. Being accountable for anything you do in our society is being attacked, because people just want it to die. There should be no accountability for anything you do, because you should be able to do whatever you want to do and nobody should ever say anything to you or about you. That is basically the message that has been pushed in my ear. I've been listening to on every single case of anything dealing with women and this slut shaming and all this other bullshit. And even when I think about the drugs, when I talk to people who, you know, sell drugs, and we talk about the damage it does, and it's like, oh, well, I'm just trying to get money. It shouldn't matter how I get it. But staying on topic, the accountability needs to be there. And the standard, didn't say that the standard should have stayed the same, but the standard should not decrease just to make people feel better. Now, I believe that our women should be raised to think and act at their highest potential. Now, if you are a woman, and like you said, Bianca, if you want to strip and you want to be a good stripper, there's nothing wrong with you portraying that, because that's what you want to do. Because anybody can do what they want to do, but you cannot dictate to me how I am going to think about that. I cannot help it.
Correct.
If you walk outside with something over your nipple and just a thong on, and I'm like, oh, she ready. Now, I'm not supposed to go up to you and smack your ass, you know, because of it. But you can't help me if I think that you are a hoe, because I see that. Because you knew that when you put it on. So just be accountable for your actions, because you know what's up. You know when you wear light next to nothing, how people may view you. And if you don't care, that's fine. But if you care, then maybe you shouldn't do it, because maybe that ain't for you. Maybe that's not how you should express yourself, because you can't handle just being free. That's part of my two cents. I don't want to take it because I can talk all day on it.
Well, luckily, we have the whole show open to this topic, so we'll have plenty of time to talk on this. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring up the first topic, or the subtopic of this, which is the Erykah Badu situation. And for those of you who are not aware of what's going on, basically Erykah Badu tweeted something. I'll read you her first couple of tweets that rubbed a lot of people, especially her supporters, women, feminists, a lot of black women, the wrong way. So her first tweet was, there was an article ruling that high school girls lower their skirts so male teachers are not distracted. I agree because I'm aware that we live in a sex, eye-driven society, and it is everyone's, males and females, responsibility to protect young ladies. One way to protect youth is to remind them that we are all sexual in nature, and as they grow and develop, it's natural to attract men. It is not them who is doing anything wrong by being beautiful and attractive, but with such imbalance in our society, it is smart to be. So I'm going to kind of pause that there because she kind of goes on for a while. And for someone that had actually read all of the tweets, I'm not going to say I 100% disagree with her. But I will say that the main focus was on her first tweet, which was that she read an article about schoolgirls lowering their skirts so male teachers are not distracted, and that she agreed. So I'm going to let Shalise kind of go with your opinion because I know this is the hot topic, the hottest topic that you wanted to discuss with this. So I want to let you start with how you feel.
Okay. So when it comes to, because this relates to the messages that we send young girls, and it's so important that we don't make young girls feel like you can't be who you are. I mean, I wish that we lived in a world where women could wear whatever we wanted without fear of violence or sexual assault. But that's not the world that we live in. It's not. Now, I know with what Erykah said, it seems a little extreme to say, well, girls should lower their hems so male teachers won't be attracted to them and so male students won't be attracted to them. I mean, do I think that? I don't think that that's realistic. I don't think that's going to solve anything. But I think that we need to start having a conversation about, in classroom sexuality, because think about all of the teacher-student sex scandals that we see involving both male and female teachers. Conversation that we need to have instead of saying that, you know, it's victim blaming to say that male teachers are going to be attracted to these girls. They are. High school teachers, middle school teachers, I've seen it a million times. When I was in school myself, I've heard a million stories about teachers and students sleeping together. We see it in the news all the time. So I think that she was just coming forward with something that's, you know, I didn't really understand why it stirred up as much controversy as it did, because that's something that I've heard my grandmother say, you know, things that I've heard my aunts and my, you know, elders say a lot, that women have to be careful of how we present ourselves because, no, we cannot count on a man to be able to control himself. That's just reality. That's where we are. I understand where we wish we could be. Yes, we should be telling young boys and men that they should not be putting their hands on women in any kind of unsolicited or unwelcome way. That's what we should always, that should always be our message. But we also have to think about, realistically, what is the mindset of some of these strange men that are out there in the street? We don't know. And they aren't, you know, having conversations about respectability politics and victim blaming and slut shaming. They don't care about any of it. So I think that the conversation, it needs to move past how Keith said, you know, like saying things to avoid making people feel bad about how they may dress or how they may behave. It's about being safe. I'm not saying that you can't do what you want to do, but also know that there are going to be men who try you. That's the reality that
you have. Yeah, and I agree with that 100%. You know, Nicole and I were talking about this one day, and, I mean, I think the issue, or not even the issue, is the thing is I wouldn't say that all men are predators. Are there men that are predators? Yes. Are there women that are predators? Yes. To to go along with your statement about the students and the teachers, it was a news article literally on the news this morning about this lady that drove up from some state down south to Herndon, Virginia, to have sex with a 13-year-old male student, and she is an older teacher. So as you stated, it does happen both ways. And boys are wearing shorts and pants, so it's not like they're in school wearing booty shorts. So I don't think that your attire necessarily constitutes a predator seeking you out. May it make you more vulnerable? That's another story, because as Keith said, you know, what people may think and perceive of you due to what you have on, you can't control that. That's no different than someone having locks and a person perceiving them as being unclean or unkept. It doesn't mean that that's what you are, but you cannot necessarily stop a person from perceiving it, you know what I'm saying, in that way. So I definitely, you know, kind of agree with both of you guys. And what I want to do now is, for a quick second, I'm going to go to, I do see we have two callers on the line, so I'm going to go to the first caller, which is 3497, caller 3497 on the line. If you're there, would you like to pose your question or speak your piece?
Hi, my name is Nancy. Yes, I actually wanted to speak on the topic, and I actually know Shalise. We go to a class together here in Baltimore.
Hi,
I just wanted to give her a shout out and say hi.
Hi.
How you doing? Well, I wanted to speak on it from a couple of angles. One of them with being the definition of what's modest. You know, because I hear a lot of people say, you know, if you dress a certain way, they feel as though I guess you kind of had it coming to you, but somebody else could think that way based on their standard of modesty. Like for me, for example, I grew up in, you know, the Christian era, and I was taught that modesty is when, you know, you, of course, you cover your breasts and your stomach and back, and your skirt should come, you know, to your knee. And that it not, you know, but like not be too tight or whatever, you know, not like form fitting, but it come, skirts and shorts should come to your knee. Your top should cover your breast and stomach and back. And as long as it's not, you know, like hugging you or whatever, that to me was modest. But whereas though someone else who may have been raised, maybe Islam, they are taught that their skirts and shorts should come to their ankle, you know, and that, you know, they should cover their head. You know, and there's a little bit, I would say, more strict, you know. So it's like, you know, what's the standard of modesty? Because someone could think that, you know, I'm not dressed modestly, you know, but that's just what I was taught what modesty was. And someone else who may have been Islam may have another standard of modesty, you know. So I think that there has to, we have to, I would say, kind of redefine kind of define what we, you know, what modesty is, because everybody has their own perspective of it. And also, I was looking at it at another end of with victims. Like, a lot of times when you look at predators, I don't think they target people more so on what they dress. I think it's more so based on who they feel as though they can get away with victimizing. You know, like, for instance, when you look at when people who break in homes, you know, they typically target homes where it's maybe a female living by themselves or an older person living by themselves or an older couple, and there's not a lot of people visiting them. So if your child is wrapped up from head to toe, or, you know, if they're showing less, like, if that child doesn't have a lot of friends or a lot of, if there's just a single mother visiting them, they have a higher possibility of being a victim because it's less resistant. You know, from what I've known, I guess I watch a lot of like CSI and, well, I'm not going to say CSI, forensic files and stuff like that. A lot of people know that predators target people where it's the less resistance and people who they feel as though they can get away with victimizing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think it has more to do with that than it does with how they dress. People do what they feel as though they can get away with. And if your child is a child of a single parent where they don't have a lot of family to protect them, they only see their parent, that one parent come to pick them up, and they don't have a lot of friends, your child is going to be a victim of something no matter how they dress, because they don't have, you know, that protection to help them, you know. So that's just my perspective on it.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
Yeah, and I agree, and thank you for calling in, Nancy. And
you're
I think
welcome.
What both of you and Devin Shalice was saying was, like, this, I don't think that we need to first look for the solution before we pose the question. I think we need to make sure we're posing the right question so that we can find the right answer. So, yeah, it's important for us to bring this up and say, well, should their skirts be longer or should this happen? Because, one, we shouldn't give kids that much control. You know what I'm saying? They shouldn't have that much control over what they do and what they wear as far as, like, to school and stuff like that. You don't even, most of us don't even have that option at work as a grown up. So that's one. Two, I would say from a male perspective and just being clear, pervert is a pervert, okay? A perverted person, it will be a perverted person, a pedophile, somebody like that will be that way. You know what I'm saying? So I'm not going to say any woman deserves anything because she can walk outside butt naked and I'm not going to rape her. You know what I'm saying? So I may look, but I will say this. In the argument of maybe short skirts being too short or this may being too tight or whatever the case may be, yes, there are times where I may see a girl, and because I'm a man and my eyes wander and, you know, whatever, and I'm in my own head, I may see a girl and be like, oh, man, damn, she look good. And then look again and be like, oh, damn, she look young as hell. You know what I mean? And it's like, you know, that thought instantly leaves my mind. And a lot of times, like, if I say I'm riding down the street and you see, like a few girls walking and they have the little khaki pants on or something, you know that those are kids. You know that they probably come from high school. Like, my brain won't even allow me to go there. But there are other times where I'll see a young girl and these young girls are built like grown women now. And they'll have something on that a grown woman would wear. And my eyes instantly will flow there. You know what I'm saying? And my mind was like, damn. And then, like I said, if I peep that she's young, I might be like, oh, shit. So I say that to say this, to limit the attraction to the pervert would be best for our kids. And I'm just saying, with my nieces, even my nephews, you know, when God blesses me with kids, I will protect them at all costs. And that means that they got to wear longer stuff or bigger stuff, not form-fitting. I have no problem with that. When they get up to a point, you know, when they buying their own clothes and they making their own decisions, by every means, do what you want to do. You know what I'm saying? But, yes, I would try my best to limit that. So, yes, the conversation is very important, and we should talk about it, and we should try to come to some type of agreement to say, I think this should be the standard of how we allow our young girls to dress while in school. You know what I'm saying? Because that's important.
Yeah, I can definitely get with that. Lisi?
Hello.
Well, yeah. I think that we need to, I mean, for me, the conversation is beyond what a girl wears. It's about self-protection. And I think that that's something that women do not really want to, you know, rationalize with, that there are people out there who will hurt you just because you are a woman. That at times we put ourselves into vulnerable positions, and you have to be able to realize that. So when I start talking about how I'm not with the whole, like, dress how you want to be addressed thing, but I understand that there's certain things that I'm not going to wear outside just because it makes me a target, and I don't want to be a target. If I don't want men to look at me in a certain way, speak to me in a certain way, then I'm going to carry myself a certain way. And I don't think that there's, now we live in this society where it's wrong. It's like this atmosphere right now where it's wrong to say that. You know, you see women like Aisha Curry being bashed because she kind of says that she prefers to be classier than, you know, wearing more revealing clothes, then it becomes, oh, she's being condescending. Oh, she's, you know, talking down to other women. And I don't see it like that at all. I think it's really about preference.
Okay. Am I still on the air or am I muted? Hello?
No, you're still here, Nancy.
Oh, thank you, Nancy. you want to make
right.
a comment or are you good?
Yeah, no, I did want to say something else to that. I was looking at, like, yes, I believe that we should definitely be considerate of how we dress, but I also feel that we should hold more accountability. I feel like on the predators who are in our communities. Like, I grew up, of course, in Baltimore City, you know, in a public housing area when I was younger, you know, and like, even, like, when you look at some of the things that were happening in the area, like, a lot of times, like, when you look at things that happen, like, with the crime, with the prostitution and things like that, you know, like, even on the street, like, if you look at, like, the few white prostitutes that were out there and the, you know, the ones that were black or whatever, like, our men, I feel like they were more reluctant to rape a daggone white prostitute than they were to, you know, disrespect a young girl going to school, you know. And I feel like, yes, we should teach our young girls to be respectful and stuff like that, but don't use that as a gateway to not protect the women and children in your neighborhood. You know what I mean? Like, hold these predators accountable and push them out of your neighborhood. Don't say, well, they was, you know, dressed this certain way or whatever, and just kind of brush it off and not deal with the predator. That's the issue I have, is that we put a lot of the blame on the victim and don't deal with the predators and use it as an excuse not to protect our women and children in our community. And that's the issue that I have with that.
Well, I say this, as growing up, my uncle who worked in a correctional facility and dealt with people like that all the time, when these people are found out, it really is hell inside them walls for them. And I'm not saying that that's the type of justice we need to seek, and I'm not even saying that that's what you're saying. But, you know, there are consequences behind being the enemy, and that's from people who done murdered everything moving will look at somebody who done touched a little girl or a little boy like they got to die because they the devil. So I will say that, you know, yeah, we need to put these people more on front street, and they have tools. You know, and this also goes into accountability. They have tools in mostly every community that shows you who the predators in your area are that have been convicted and had to register. And you can go anywhere and on the website, and next time we're on here, I will bring this back up and I'll get the website. If anybody else knows, they can say it. But it's definitely a website for you to go see the people around you, and you'll be amazed. You'll be amazed, because I was helping someone look for a house at one point, and that was one thing that she wanted to do. And once we did it, you see all these red dots pop up around the house, and you're like, goodness gracious, I didn't even know that was, I mean, people living around there, let alone this many people that have been convicted of something, dealing with sexual predatory, you know, dealing with that. So it's like, you know, they need to be punished, but we also have to, like I said, we just have to keep each other accountable. And like Shalise said, just, if you know that that's the scenario, try to avoid. If I know I'm going somewhere with men all red and they get me shot, I should wear my white and black that day. You understand what I'm saying? Like, it's nothing wrong with adjusting. There's nothing wrong with it.
Right. Thank you so much, Nancy, for calling. We're going to go. We have the lines are actually getting a little hot, so we're going to go to the next caller. But I definitely want to thank you for calling and sharing your opinion. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Shalise.
Okay. In response to what Nancy said, I want to thank my sister for making that important point that the predators, they do need to be held accountable, because I don't think that, you know, no woman deserves to be violated in any kind of way. It doesn't matter what you're wearing. That's what slut shaming, that is the original, what that term originally meant, that, you know, it wasn't about if you wear a short dress and I say that you look like a hoe, in reality, we're still trying to define what a hoe actually is, but I'm just using that term. But if you're wearing a short dress and I call you a hoe, that's not slut shaming to me. Slut shaming means that it doesn't matter what a woman is wearing at the time of her assault, it should not become even a part of the conversation as to why she was assaulted or if she is asking for it. That, to me, is slut shaming, and that, to me, is problematic. because people are going to have opinions about how you dress as long as they have eyes. But no one has the right to put their hands on any woman, on any person, because of how they're dressed. Respectability politics, it doesn't just extend to women. It extends to men as well. It extends to the gay community. You know, the gay community is horribly bashed because of how some men and women may dress. So the conversation tonight is just saying that when we talk about dots versus queens, I feel like we need to change that conversation because we shouldn't be at odds with each other at all. That's what I'm trying to break down. Why are we at odds with each other? Why do we feel like, you know, if a woman says that she prefers to be more modest, why is that an affront to a woman who, you know, likes to wear more revealing clothing if that's just to build her own confidence? Some women do say that, but they like to wear tight clothes or, you know, what we would call sexy clothes because it makes them feel good. But we shouldn't be at odds because we decide to dress one way or another or behave one way or another. So, yeah, go ahead. Let's take the rest of the callers.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Nancy.
You're welcome. I'm enjoying the show.
All right. So we're going to go to the next caller, 5054. Are you on the line with us?
I'm here. Hello?
Hi. How are you, Queen? Yes. Can you hear us?
Hey. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you? Who are we speaking with?
I'm good. I'm really enjoying the show and the conversation tonight. I'm Kiara Butler, for anybody that was wondering.
Girl.
I see.
You was going to call in and I said your name? No, you was just going to call in and act like you were some anonymous person, Kiara.
I was going to act like I was anonymous. But I kind of want people to know who I am so that people will kind of understand my point of view with a topic, because I just noticed there's a pushback towards women that choose to be modest, and that's something that's alarming to me, because I feel like if everything is all this pro-choice and, you know, you have the choice as a woman, then why is there so much retaliation for women that choose modesty or choose to be more submissive or that choose to be these things that people feel that men have defined women to be. I feel like I don't like the fact that I feel like women aren't I feel like the what women choose, quote unquote, is very much so controlled by what the media says, especially black women. It's like, it's really probably all women, but it's like if a woman chooses to do whatever she feels is comfortable or have an opinion that may not be popular or something like that, it just gets so much pushback. Like me personally, I feel that children should wear longer skirts to school, but not for the reason that Erykah Badu gave about, you know, making sure that these perverts don't touch them.
Right.
No, that I don't think that's the reason. I think that children should wear longer because they're children. And I feel like the innocence of children is being taken, and all of this very adult mindset is being pushed on our children so early. I mean, you watch Disney Channel, and you know, they'll be saying that these kids are in middle school, but all of the language that the kids use, the clothes that the kids wear, they're wearing makeup, they're doing very adult-centered things, and then you look at children now, and you try to figure out why there's so much adult behavior in our children. It's very media-based, and I feel like we as a society don't take enough responsibility for what we've allowed the media to do to our family structure, our children, our families, our men, our women. I don't think we give what the media's influence is on us enough credit, because it's heavy. Like the fact that we look at the media to tell us what the new trends are. You know what I'm saying? I feel like we ignore the fact that, I mean, that most of us are followers of whatever the media says. But if a man is like, hey, you know, I actually like a woman that does such and such and such, that has so much pushback. And that's so bizarre to me, because if your whole idea is to purchase clothes to attract men, which I feel like a lot of women aren't honest about, because they're like, oh, no, I dress for myself.
Okay.
Most of the time it's you're dressing for yourself to attract a suitor or someone to be attracted to you. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you have moments where you do dress for yourself, yes. But a lot of times you're very aware of what your appearance is to attract someone else. And I just feel like people just aren't honest enough about what our objectives are as a society and what we've allowed other people's influence to be on what is attractive and what we should be attracted to. It's crazy to me. But, I mean, that's just my two cents on it.
Thank you, my sister. Thank you.
Yes, much appreciated. And I for sure definitely agree, and I think you made a statement that I was going to say as well. I wouldn't want my child wearing short skirts, not because someone may be looking at you, but you're a child, and you should dress
yes.
as such. These days, we have children dressing like adults. They have the same outfits that their parents have on, and it's like,
yes.
Mom got on booty shorts, and so do I, and this cute little shirt
yes.
wrapped around my waist, but that's not cute. You know what I'm saying? So I think it's certain
right.
things that we have to take into account, and like we've been saying, as far as accountability, media as well as ourselves, and, you know, it's what we think is cute when a child is dressed as an adult and they're fully clothed. We're like, oh, that's cute, but she looks 30 with a weave is okay for some people, but if she has on booty shorts, it's not. I don't think the issue is the shorts.
Right.
I think children should be dressed appropriately. So I agree with you 100%, Kiara.
Yeah.
Keith, any thoughts on Kiara's statement?
Oh,
you
I thought
hang,
it
on
was
the, hang low on that one.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I wanted to let y'all cook on this one, especially, you know, just because I feel like it was important for women to hear from women, because a lot of times when men say stuff, certain demographic of women will just automatically assume that he's being, like, a chauvinist or something. So, you know, I love what y'all are saying. I agree with what y'all are saying. And, like, I just will reiterate what I've been saying this whole time. It's all about accountability and holding ourselves accountable. So if that just being you being a parent, and making sure that your child is in the best possible position, then do so. And like you said, not because for those predators, just because they should value themselves as such as a child, and like they can't make their own decisions. When they can make their own decisions, if they want to be naked, hey, you can't do nothing about it. But as they, you know what I'm saying? But when they're children, and as they, you know, and you have the ultimate power, use that power and show them what you believe to be right. And everybody will be a little bit better. I'm not going to say it's going to be totally right, but everybody will be a little bit better.
Right.
For sure. Definitely agree. Thank you so much, Kiara, for calling in and being an amazing point of view, as you usually are.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, so we're going to go to the next guest. And while I segue to that, before I do that, I just want to say, kind of going with what you wear, most of you that hear me on the show, if you don't personally know me, I am, you know, I'm gay. I'm a dominant woman, as some people may call us, the dom, whatever you want to call it. And I don't dress like a girl at all. I've had several conversations with my girlfriend about men hitting on me with my baggy jeans, with a polo, with a fitted on, with a snapback on, with whatever the case may be on. So I really don't think that, like I said, has anything to do with what you wear. Men, women, people can be disrespectful. People can be predatorial, period. So I'm going to go to the next caller that we have. 0585, are you on the line with us? Oh, 585, are you there? All right, I'm going to go to the next caller since we have them being quiet. So 2863, caller 2863, are you on the line? Hello? Hello, caller 2863. Are you there? We hear you in the background. All right, so you're not there, so I'm going to go. We can go back to where we were for the time being. So, Shalice, I know you've been kind of quiet, but did you have any particular points on this Erykah Badu subject, or I'm going to kind of slide into another topic that's still related to this topic?
No, go ahead. Slide on.
All right, so what I thought was interesting, another conversation was between Wale and Azealia Banks, and they kind of got into it on Twitter, and we've talked about Azealia Banks several times before, but I thought this conversation was kind of interesting because I watched it kind of go down live, and I just watched this conversation kind of crash and burn. So for those of you that are kind of not familiar with what's going on, Azealia Banks had tweeted, "They would, but they don't. Even when my suffering is public, no one steps out to protect me." And it had, like, it was a response to somebody else's Twitter. So while their response was, "We are all terrified of you. Public embarrassment is a real fear. You probably have thousands of people scared to say anything to you." And which that led to, like, a verbal, like, assault from Azealia Banks, in which she called this man a nigger. Said he should be put in jail along with all black men for not supporting black women and for not supporting her. And I thought it was very interesting because of someone from the DMV and has been listening to Wale since he was on the Hometown Jams for our radio and listening to his poetry, is someone that I know appreciates black women of all shades, regardless of him being an African man in America. But I just thought it was very interesting, and what kind of touched me the wrong way is, I know there's an argument against, you know, how black women can be perceived to be aggressive, or it's a stereotype that they're aggressive, loud, you know, extreme, whatever the case may be. However, I just didn't think it was called for in this conversation, because while I wasn't talking about all black women, he was talking about her. And what I thought was interesting is he said, "We're terrified of you because public embarrassment is a real fear." And then she dragged him. So I just felt like if she wanted to see him on a level, or for him to understand where she was coming from, that wasn't the way to do it. Because at that point, she was just going on him and he was trying to explain himself. But at that point in time, it was like, it's no point. He was literally trying to have a conversation, if you will, with her on Twitter, and she just was not having it. So I don't know if you guys kind of heard about this, but I would definitely love to hear what y'all think.
Yeah, I agree with you in a sense of, like, for one, Wale has always been very vocal about not only black women, but women in general, and how he's probably one of the very few rappers that would make a hit song about an ambitious woman. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of his songs are not heavily sexual in nature. It's about really trying to find the love of your life and appreciating that person. So I really don't see him as a person who doesn't appreciate women. And like you said, with her comment, it's like, yes, he's speaking about you and he being what you want. You want a man, or a black man, for what she says, to have your back and to do whatever. If him saying this to you, "Well, this is why this isn't happening for you. I'm letting you know as your brother, being real with you." Now, maybe he could have DM'd her or something like that, but who knows, she wouldn't have exposed the DM and posted on Instagram and then went off on him that way. But, you know, that's a form of him maybe looking out like, "Hey, let me be real with you." You know what I'm saying? You be jumping out of the gym. And it's important for, you know, women to understand, like, you know, when brothers do have your back. You know, I have two sisters, and I have countless females in my life that I would go there for. But it's like, it's important for them to know, don't call me for every little thing, and don't start shit and expect me to end it, because now you put my life and my whole situation in jeopardy. So it's for Azealia Banks, it's not that people don't have your back because you're a black woman and black men just this and this. You be saying some off the wall stuff that people probably
right.
can't even back through. So it's like, you know, I hate when people try to make everything an issue deeper than it is. No, this is about her, not about black women in general. You know what I'm saying? I just don't like her. So yeah, whatever.
whack.
I agree. Shalise?
Well, I mean, I think that Azealia Banks is that brand of black woman who is extremely hypersensitive. I did take the time to read the exchange between them, and, you know, I don't feel like he was coming from a place of disrespect. It may have been wrong timing or the wrong form. But, yeah, I mean, I think that some women are very hypersensitive, especially when it comes to the relationship between them and a black man. And she has said before that she has a contentious relationship with the black man, you know, period. So I think that any time a black man comes at her in a way that she doesn't find to be appealing or, in her worldview, respectful, she's going to go ham. Ham, egg, and cheese, and that's what she did.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think she just comes from a hurt place. And like I said, as someone that is a fan of most of her music and actually listens to what she says, a lot of times she has valid points, but it's just like they're at the wrong times, pointed at the wrong people. And I just think it's crazy because we were just talking about her running her mouth to Sarah Palin 2 weeks ago. So at this point in time, it's like, you just don't care. You going. You going to continue to go. And it doesn't matter. Because her last tweet, which I think was like even more just blew my mind, was go to hell and stay there. I hate you, nigger. With the ER, like with hearts and diamonds and moons, like it just bothers me because you talk about all of this and you talk about all that, but you are able to call a black man or a black woman, all of the things that you feel like you've been called and are injustices and shouldn't be done, and treat people how the white supremacists that you talk about every day treat them and talk to them as such. So it's turning me off more and more of her. And it was just like right when I thought she was off Twitter, she popped back up on my timeline. So, you know, for me, it's just, I think it's interesting, but at this point, I'm tired of watching it because it's a crash and burn situation every time, and you're just making people not like you.
I mean, so. I think it even goes deeper than that. I think it speaks to the fact that, you know, that's a very sad relationship for a black woman to have with black men. Like, that's a very sad perspective to have, and what's even sadder is that a lot of women feel that way, is that the black man is here to hurt them and oppress them, and not realizing that that is just a symptom of the system of white supremacy that we are living in. You know, like, the black man is not oppressing you. That it's a system that's oppressing us all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when she makes these comments like this, number one, I feel like her and Kanye, they must have the same, you know, coke dealer or something, because it's like these rants that she continues to go off on, where she is disrespecting people who look like her, who look and love like her. It's crazy to me. And I hope that other black women, they see this and they realize that it's time for us to come to the table together, because eventually we're going to have a conversation about why black women and black men are so separated. And it's going to be a tough conversation to have, but we have to have it. It's not just about being,
yeah,
you know, close to your mate. It's about, or the men in your family, but about, you know, seeing our brother, seeing the men in our community as our brothers, and them seeing us as their sisters.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think, kind of furthermore to carry or, you know, add on to that, we're separated just in general. And the matter of the fact is, we all have our plights. light-skinned people have their issues of feeling like they don't fit in, or mixed people as well. Dark-skinned people have their issues. Black men have their plight in society. Black women have their plight in society. We all have similar plights, but then there are also different needs. I think it would just be great if we all supported each other in that. As we know from history why we don't do that, or why it is hard for us to do that, and we turn on each other. It's a cycle that has to be broken. At this point in time, we know the reason why. You can watch any movie on Black history at this point in time. You can read any book. We know why we append ourselves against each other, because we were forced to do so. My question is, why in 2016 are we still doing that? You know what I'm saying? It's team dark skin, team light skin, you this, you that. And, you know, sometimes I find myself falling into jokes, and then it's like, no, that's, you know, it's not, when you think about it on a deeper level, like, I may be joking about it, but it's somebody else that may be taking that very seriously, and it's a deeper meaning to lots of things. As my girlfriend likes to say, words mean things, and I think we have to, you know, take that into consideration, because we're separating ourselves in a time where we need to band together, and we're just, if we keep doing it, we're not going to be able to progress. Every other community can seem to do that shit but us. So we're going to have to break that cycle 100%.
Yeah. And the last thing I just want to say about that, and I totally agree with everything y'all was saying, but the last thing I want to say about that is, when it comes to hurting people like her, it really grinds my gears when people use real serious issues, or you take real serious stances against bullshit issues. Like, every time you get into an argument, then you try to go to the deepest root of, well, black men, if it's just something between you and somebody else, it's like, it, especially for somebody like her who doesn't seem like she stands behind anything she says, or she doesn't stay consistent behind anything she says. It's just always sporadic. It makes it hard for the people who are consistent, who are diligent, who are out here really trying to fight the good fight of bringing us together and bringing knowledge into our communities and bringing change into our communities. It really cheapens the message, because now you have people like this who are always, you know, spewing their rhetoric and, you know, even bringing up facts and stuff like that, but then it's not because they really want you to understand or they really want to give you knowledge. It's just to win an argument. And that's weak to me. So I really hate it, because, like I said, it cheapens the message for those people out here who are really fighting and who are really doing their thing. So that's another reason why I really don't care for her and people like her. You know what I'm saying? So it's all about unifying. And if you ain't spreading knowledge in order for somebody else to gain it, then don't spew it for your own personal gain, because that's not what it's about.
100%, and, you know, I agree. I think that's the message. That's why we have this show and are trying to use this platform. So if you don't like to read, you don't like to do whatever the case may be, it's there to have a conversation. You can listen in your car, you can listen while you're working, or whatever the case may be, to open a dialogue. So whether you call in and chat with us, or you have a conversation with your family, your girlfriend, your kids, whatever the case may be, we just hope that it opens a dialogue. I don't have any upcoming events for the evening. I don't think Shalice does either. Keith, do you have any upcoming events?
I'll be performing tomorrow at a block party, 420 block party. This is not this is just a unity event, nothing to do with anything we speak about here. But it's a 420 event, block party tomorrow in Northeast off of Morris Road. It's from 2 to 10. So you come out,
what time?
A lot of good vibes. From 2 to 10. From 2 to 10. It's a block party. I'll be there all day.
Perfect.
So,
also, one more thing. Aren't you... I'm sorry, go ahead, Keith.
No, I was just saying, if you're available, come on out.
Perfect. And don't you have another upcoming festival as well, young man?
Oh, yeah, me and my crew will be performing at Broccoli City Festival. Unfortunately, it's sold out. But if you already have your tickets, make your way to the One Love Masters stage where we will be performing at. And check out some good independent talent. There'll be a lot of big names there, like Future and Janae Aiko and the Internet. But, you know, come support your local talent as well, as we go out and show out and show y'all how it's done here. So, you know, That's the 30th, April 30th, I believe, Broccoli City Festival. So if you have your tickets, come
yes.
check me.
And I know, like, the radio was still giving them out, and there's still contests going on, but I had to make sure we announced that because that is a big deal. So congrats to you on performing at Broccoli City Festival. Y'all make sure y'all get out there. If y'all have your tickets, try to find some. Look up resellers or something. But thanks again, everyone, for joining tonight. We're going to catch you in 2 weeks. So check our page, our Facebook, our Twitter, Young Black and Empowered, hashtag YB Radio. You can find us on all platforms. Y'all have a good night, and thank you.
Good night. Peace, everybody.